This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of January 26th, 2006.
All right, freeze! Police!
Bad Cop No Donut!
Bad
Cop, cop.
No. Donut!
It's under law, and I rule.
I'm Ron Anisich with your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption. Stay tuned after this week's headlines for an interview with former East Fishkill, New York police officer Dina Perillo. Perillo recently filed a lawsuit against the East Fishkill Police Department alleging a pattern of sexual harassment after she was allegedly sexually assaulted by the chief of police. But first, here is a look at what the police did to us this week. A former Riverside, California police officer pleaded no contest on Friday to 65 charges connected to the molestation of four young boys. The Los Angeles Times reports that Adam Brown is accused of abusing the boys over a four-year period ending in 2002 when he was still working as a police officer. Brown is accused of forcing the boys to perform sex acts on at least 30 occasions. Some of the sex acts with the boys were captured in photographs and on videotape. Brown worked as a school resource officer before getting his job with the Riverside Department. Brown faces life in prison when he is sentenced on February 17th. Last year, he was sentenced to 30 years in prison by a judge in Wisconsin after he was found guilty of traveling there to have sex with boys. A woman filed a lawsuit last week against a South Salt Lake, Utah police officer who sexually assaulted her and the city that employed him. The Deseret Morning News says that Officer Scott Daniels sexually assaulted the woman at a traffic stop in April 2005. The woman said the assault lasted almost 1 hour. The woman claims that Daniels placed his hands on her breasts and down her pants. The woman's lawsuit claims that the city of South Salt Lake was aware of other problems with Officer Daniels and allowed him to continue with unsupervised late-night patrols. Daniels has already pleaded guilty to one count of sexual battery in the case. He will be sentenced on February 13th. Three people are dead after a Slave Lake, Alberta police chase on Friday. According to a Canadian press report, police had just begun a chase of a vehicle they believed was stolen when it crossed into oncoming traffic and collided head-on with another vehicle. Three of the four female occupants of the other car died. A fourth woman is in serious condition. An Omaha, Nebraska police officer was arrested last Wednesday and charged with domestic abuse. An Associated Press report says that Officer John Sherman is charged with third-degree domestic assault and false imprisonment. The charges are connected to two separate recent incidents. The alleged assault occurred on January 1st, and the alleged false imprisonment occurred the weekend before his arrest. His ex-wife was the victim in both cases. Sherman submitted paperwork requesting an early retirement prior to his arrest.
We got through it. Justice prevailed. I'm proud to serve the community, and the community can be proud of me. I did nothing wrong. I just want to be left alone. That's all. I have done nothing wrong. Everybody knows what I'm doing. I'm not hiding anything.
A police officer in Wichita, Kansas, was sentenced to 6 months of probation last week for assaulting two women. The Wichita Eagle says that Officer Gary Tabor was accused of striking his wife and another woman. He pleaded guilty to two counts of domestic battery before he was sentenced. Tabor will also lose his job provided his department adheres to state law. A Waterloo, Iowa police officer pleaded not guilty to a charge that he had sexual contact with a female inmate. An Associated Press report says that Sergeant Robert Kniff is accused of committing the misconduct last December. Kniff was arrested this month after an investigation and resigned from his job last week. If convicted, he faces a possible 2 years in prison and a $5,000 fine. A police officer in Manistee, Michigan, was arrested last week for hitting his girlfriend. An Associated Press report says that Officer Matthew Thompson was arrested by state police after an argument with his girlfriend turned violent. Thompson has been released from custody and has been suspended from his job. The village of Birch Run, Michigan, fired their chief of police on Monday for insubordination. The Saginaw News says that Chief Robert Mowat failed to sign an agreement to improve his job performance after he received two consecutive poor job evaluations. Mowat failed to meet a series of goals and objectives demanded by the village council. A Chicago police officer was fired last week and charged with the beating of a man who was handcuffed and shackled to a wheelchair. WMAQ reports that Officer William Causey is charged with multiple counts of battery, aggravated battery, and official misconduct. At the time of the beating, Causey was supervising the man as he waited to have a stabbing wound treated at a hospital. Hospital security video captured the officer shackling the man to the wheelchair before beating him with a club. Another Chicago police officer who stole credit cards and debit cards from a man in custody pleaded not guilty to official misconduct last Friday. An Associated Press report says that Officer James Chevis is accused of stealing the cards from a man he arrested at a bar in November. He was witnessed using the cards within hours of the man's arrest while he was still in uniform. Chevis was stripped of his police powers when he was arrested last month. A police officer in Moline, Illinois, was found guilty of driving under the influence of alcohol on Monday. The Quad City Times says that Officer Timothy Sathoff was arrested in June after he crashed his vehicle into a trailer on an interstate highway. He failed several sobriety tests administered at the time of his arrest. Sathoff was off duty at the time of the accident. He will be sentenced on February 10th. A sheriff's deputy in Licking County, Ohio, was sentenced to 4 years in prison on Tuesday. WCMH reports that Deputy Dustin Burden was found guilty of two counts of endangering children. Burden was accused of shaking his 10-week-old daughter so violently that she may never walk, eat, or learn normally. The child was assaulted by the deputy last March, but still requires a feeding tube to eat. Toronto police are under investigation after a deadly car chase on Tuesday. A Canadian press report says that the man was being followed by the police when he drove his car through an intersection, striking another vehicle, and subsequently died. The driver of the other car was not seriously injured. A Woodstock, New Hampshire police officer was indicted last week for stealing money from a drug education program. WCAX reports that Officer Barbara Mack Keeney stole thousands of dollars from the DARE program on four occasions. She used the money to pay her rent and for travel expenses for her family. A Bridgeport, Connecticut police officer pleaded guilty to a federal drug charge last Thursday. The Hartford Courant says that Officer Jeffrey Streck pleaded guilty to conspiracy to possess and distribute oxycodone. He was the subject of an FBI wiretap during a year-long drug investigation which ended last year. Streck was arrested last March. He is scheduled to be sentenced on April 7th. He faces a possible 20-year prison sentence and a $1 million fine. A police officer in Lowell, Massachusetts, was arrested last week for domestic assault and battery. The Lowell Sun says that Officer Kenneth DeRoche was released on his own recognizance. He was required to hand over all of his firearms and has been suspended from his job pending the outcome of an internal affairs investigation. DeRoche will appear in court next on February 27th. A sheriff's deputy in Barnstable County, Massachusetts, was arrested last week for drunk driving. The Cape Cod Times says that Deputy Robert Montalto drove his truck into three parked cars before fleeing into his home across the street from the crash. Officers who responded found the deputy's truck parked in his driveway with significant front-end damage and some shrubbery still attached to the front grille. Montalto pleaded not guilty to operating a motor vehicle under the influence of alcohol and leaving the scene of an accident with property damage. Montalto has a previous conviction for driving under the influence of alcohol. Sheriff's deputies in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, are accused of making fun of and physically abusing a disabled man last week. KDKA reports that the disabled man was in court on a family law matter a few days after being released from hospital. The man lost one of his legs in a recent railroad accident. Deputies detained him at the courthouse ostensibly for owing $14 in child support. During his detention, he was repeatedly ridiculed by several deputies who made numerous jokes and taunted the man about his disability. One deputy is accused of grabbing the man's stump and causing it to bleed during a search. An internal affairs investigation is underway. A police officer in Washington, D.C. was caught surfing on the hood of a speeding police cruiser in a series of photographs taken by an eyewitness. WRC-TV reports that the unidentified officer was photographed riding on the hood of a police cruiser, which was followed by another cruiser. Both had their sirens and lights engaged and were moving faster than the posted speed limit, according to a witness. An internal investigation is underway. A jury has awarded a $3.7 million settlement to the family of a man who was wrongfully killed by a Prince George's County, Maryland police officer. The Washington Post says that Officer Carlton Jones followed an unarmed student to Fairfax, Virginia in September 2001. From his unmarked SUV, Jones fired 16 shots at the student's vehicle, striking him 8 times. The jury found that Jones was negligent, used excessive force, and could not have reasonably believed that his actions were lawful. The settlement money will be shared by the victim's parents and daughter. The settlement is one of the largest in Prince George's County history. A sheriff's deputy in Nelson County, Virginia, was arrested earlier this month for sexually abusing a child. The Waynesboro News Virginian says that Deputy Jason Fretwell is charged with indecent liberties, sodomy, and soliciting sex on the internet. Fretwell's victim was a 15-year-old family member who he allegedly began a sexual relationship with last July. Fretwell's current duty status is not known. The home of the chief of police in Marshallville, Georgia, was burned down last Friday, hours after a man died in Marshallville police custody. An Associated Press report says that the home of Chief Stephen Stewart was intentionally torched. Late on Thursday, a man died after police officers who were trying to arrest him pepper-sprayed and restrained him. News of the death spread quickly in the town, population 1,300, and a crowd of 100 angry citizens gathered at the police department in protest. Police believe that the chief's house was set on fire shortly after that gathering was dispersed by officers. No one was injured in the fire, and no arrests have been made. A Miami, Florida police officer shot an unarmed man in the genitals this week. WPLG reports that the unnamed officer was one of a group that pulled over a suspect who was seen receiving a shiny object from another man. Officers called for backup and pulled over the man a short time later. Police claim the man tried to reach for something when he was shot by the unnamed officer. A subsequent search of the car found no weapons. A Palm Beach County, Florida sheriff's deputy who is facing charges connected to stalking and breaking into the home of an ex-girlfriend will retire at the end of this month. The Palm Beach Post says that Deputy David Carhart was charged with trespass and criminal mischief in July. He is expected to appear in court next on January 30th. Carhart was suspended with pay after a second woman came forward with a stalking allegation in December. An internal investigation is ongoing despite the deputy's retirement. A Charlotte County, Florida sheriff's deputy was fired last week for falling asleep on duty and then lying about it under oath. The Charlotte Sun-Herald says that Officer Terry Hessler was found guilty at an internal hearing of neglect of duty and perjury. She was discovered by another deputy sleeping while on a security detail on September 25th. Hessler was also accused of sleeping on duty on several other occasions last year. Hessler plans to appeal her termination. A police officer in Mobile, Alabama, was arrested on Monday and charged with possession of child pornography. The Mobile Register says that Officer Frederick Renfro is being held on $3,000 bail. He was placed on administrative leave on Friday after his home was searched, and he resigned from his job on Sunday. Renfro faces up to 10 years in prison if he is convicted on the charge. A Dothan, Alabama police officer was arrested for driving under the influence of alcohol last Wednesday. The Dothan Eagle says that Officer Richard Odom was injured when he crashed his motorcycle on January 11th. He is currently on administrative leave. If Odom is found guilty, his driver's license will be suspended for 90 days, and city policy would require his termination from his job. A sheriff's deputy in Marion County, Mississippi, was sentenced to 2 years in prison on Tuesday for killing a fellow deputy last January. WDAM reports that Deputy Greg Elkins pleaded guilty to manslaughter last month. He received a 20-year prison sentence, but the judge in the case suspended all but 2 years of the sentence. The dead deputy lived in the same home as Elkins and his wife. Elkins was also fined $1,500 and ordered to pay $30,000 in restitution to the dead deputy's children. A sheriff's deputy in St. Landry Parish, Louisiana, was arrested on Monday for attacking his ex-wife. The Opelousas Daily World says that James Broussard is charged with simple assault and simple battery. He was released on a $1,700 bond and has been fired from his job. A sheriff's deputy in Bossier County, Louisiana, was arrested on Friday for driving under the influence of alcohol. The Bossier Press Tribune says that Deputy Jason Sadlin was also fired from his job. He was off duty when he was arrested. A New Orleans, Louisiana police officer who abandoned his post during Hurricane Katrina was charged with crossing state lines with a vehicle stolen from a car dealership. The Baton Rouge Advocate says that Officer William Bickham is charged with transportation of a stolen motor vehicle. He was arrested in November driving one of hundreds of vehicles stolen from a dealership by New Orleans police officers during the hurricane. Bickham resigned from his job the week after the hurricane. If convicted, he faces 10 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. An El Paso, Texas police officer was arrested on Tuesday and charged with indecency with a child. The El Paso Times says that Officer Javier Zambrano was accused of touching a 13-year-old girl after questioning her in a trailer on December 30th. He was placed on administrative leave the same day he was arrested. He had been on modified duty since the incident was reported. Zambrano is currently being held in custody on a $100,000 bond. A former police officer in Danbury, Texas, was arrested Friday in Colorado after being accused of getting his wife's teenage daughter pregnant. The Clute Facts says that Officer James Eisenhower is facing charges in two jurisdictions connected to the sexual assault of the teen. A grand jury in Texas indicted Eisenhower on sexual assault charges connected to an October 2000 incident involving the same victim. He is currently free on bail. A sheriff's deputy in Menard County, Texas, was indicted by a grand jury last week for beating an 87-year-old man. The San Angelo Standard-Times says that Deputy John Conaway is charged with felony injury to the elderly. During a traffic stop last month, Conaway was videotaped twisting the arm of the man and forcing him onto the back of a metal flatbed trailer. Conaway had stopped the man because of a malfunctioning light on the trailer. He resigned from his job 3 weeks ago. An Austin, Texas police officer was arrested last Friday for threatening a man at gunpoint. KXAN reports that Officer Robert Jackson is charged with aggravated assault. He's accused of threatening a man who he believed owed him money. Jackson remains in custody. He has been suspended from his job with pay pending the outcome of an internal investigation. A Patton Village, Texas police officer was arrested last Friday for forcing a woman to perform a sex act. The Montgomery County Courier says that Officer Vernon Allison was arrested by sheriff's deputies who caught him in the act. He is charged with sexual assault by a public servant and official oppression. Allison allegedly pulled over the woman at a traffic stop before taking her to the remote location where he was arrested. He was suspended without pay the day after his arrest. Allison faces 21 years in prison and $14,000 in fines if he is convicted on both charges. Another Patton Village, Texas police officer was accused of misconduct this week. KTRK reports that Officer Robert McCandless was accused of threatening a UPS delivery driver who parked in front of him with a gun. The officer threatened to shoot the driver if he did not move his truck. A sheriff's deputy in San Bernalillo County, New Mexico, is facing charges connected to a New Year's Eve attack on her ex-boyfriend. KOB-TV reports that Deputy Evangeline Martinez is charged with domestic violence, battery, criminal damage, and telephone harassment. Police reports accuse Martinez of going to her ex-boyfriend's home and tearing a storm door off its hinges before pushing him around and accusing him of being disloyal. She then proceeded to phone him more than 15 times over the next hour. Martinez was suspended for 1 week but has since been reinstated to her job as a school resource officer. Another Texas inmate died last Monday after being shocked with a taser while in custody. The woman was shocked once by police at the time of her arrest and then again at the Jefferson County Correctional Facility, where she was later found dead. An Escambia County, Florida sheriff's deputy was indicted last Wednesday for shocking a woman 5 times with a taser last year. Deputy Charles Dix is accused of violating the civil rights of a woman who he shocked 5 times with a taser in a department store parking lot in February 2004. Dix was suspended from his job for 30 days and subsequently resigned. A lawsuit was filed by the woman who was the victim of the attack. That lawsuit was settled for $250,000. A man in Salem, Ohio, was arrested on Saturday after he shocked his wife 3 to 6 times with a taser. The man was charged with third-degree domestic violence and released. Taser International, the makers of the weapon, still thinks that civilian taser models are a good idea. The family of a man who died after being shocked with a taser by police in Nashville, Tennessee, filed a lawsuit last week against the city and Taser International. The wrongful death lawsuit claims that the man was shocked as many as 19 times before he died last September. The lawsuit alleges poor training, hiring, and supervision of police officers and says the department did little to inform its officers about the potential risks of taser use. The suit also says that Taser International failed to inform police departments about the risks of using their product. Other than the killings already reported on this week's show, police also killed people this week in Davie, Florida, Chicago, Illinois, and Washington, D.C. Dina Perillo was a police officer in East Fishkill, New York, a small, affluent town in the Hudson Valley. Perillo was warned by the chief of another department where she once worked about the lousy reputation of the East Fishkill Police Department. Perillo took the job regardless and soon discovered that she was not only the only woman on an all-male police force, but also the only Latino officer in an all-white force. Perillo was not the first female member of the department. Officer Tina Lacare killed herself in 1991 after 5 years with the department. Two other female officers, Christine Fazio and Louise Palumbo, were also employed by the East Fishkill Police Department and ended up suing the department for sexual harassment. Perillo had a lifelong ambition to follow in the footsteps of her deceased father, who had also been a police officer. During her years working for the East Fishkill Police, she observed numerous incidents of racism, sexism, excessive force, and other misconduct. She saw what she believed was a culture of sexism in the department. Eventually, she became the target of sexual harassment and racial slurs directed at her by her fellow officers. Remarkably, she stayed quiet about all of it, mostly so that she would not lose her livelihood. Then one day in 2004, she says she was sexually assaulted by East Fishkill Police Chief Brian Nichols at his wife's birthday party. That incident was a turning point. In November 2004, she filed a lawsuit against the department. She has been offered, but has not yet accepted, a substantial settlement. I spoke with Dina Perillo from her home in New York earlier today.
My father was a cop for 16 years in Westchester County. He passed away when I was 5 years old, but I always kind of just growing up and hearing stories from my mother and my, you know, aunts and uncles and stuff. I always thought being a cop would be a good career. I thought it would be exciting. I consider myself pretty athletic, and I'm not really like the type of person kind of to sit behind a desk and you know, type whatever. There's certainly nothing wrong with that, but it just didn't appeal to me. So I went on the pursuit to become a police officer. I was a police officer for a couple part-time agencies after graduating the police academy.
So East Fishkill, New York, is not your first job in policing.
That's correct. I've had 3 other police jobs. They were part-time, which means they weren't ratified by civil service. we couldn't work any more than like 20 hours a week.
Right, but in terms of a career move, doing something like that makes perfect sense if your goal is to become a full-time officer.
Absolutely, and that's what I used basically the part-time positions as a stepping stone, more or less, to become a full-time police officer, and just to gain the experience that I may need to be a full-time officer.
The experience you gained in these other departments, those were more or less positive experiences for you?
Yes, I've prior to getting hired in the town of East Fishkill, I was hired in July of 2000. Prior to that, as I said, I worked part-time for a couple different agencies, and the experience I had with those agencies were fine. It was primarily, of course, male officers.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, it was like one big happy family. You know, everybody got along. There was, you know, I never had any problems regarding any harassment or.
I'm guessing these are also small towns like East Fishkill.
Yeah, relatively small. I would say maybe like 56 square miles. It's probably equivalent to the town of East Fishkill. Fishkill is a little bit more residential. The other police departments that I had worked in were a little bit more, had more like business, like more business areas and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So in July, or at some point in the year 2000, you find that you've been accepted, you've passed the county civil service exam, you're on your way to your new job in East Fishkill, and one of the chiefs of police gives you a kind of a heads up. You want to tell us a bit about how that went?
Right. I actually was resigning from my former police department. Once again, it was a part-time police department, and I was cleaning out my locker, and the chief of police had stood by my locker. The door was open, you know, obviously I was just off duty cleaning out my locker, and he had said to me, watch out for, you know, he said, congratulations, you know, on getting hired full time. And then he said, watch out for those guys over there in East Fishkill. He said, they don't have the best reputation with the female officers. I kind of just laughed and brushed it off. Yeah, chief, you know, thinking, okay, you know, he just wants me to stay within, you know, his department because, you know, he put me through some classes and certified me and stuff like that. So, you know, I just kind of was like, yeah, and kind of brushed it off.
Had you ever heard anything else about the East Fishkill Department that gave you any cause for concern? Did anyone else give you similar warnings?
I did. I actually had heard, and it was just common knowledge through the media here and the newspapers here. In 1991, there was a female police officer that worked in the town of East Fishkill, and she had, well, it was ruled a suicide. However, you know, we're not sure exact details of it. It's unfortunate, but back in 1991, she had killed herself with her duty weapon. She was a police officer for the town of East Fishkill for, I believe about 5 years when she had killed herself. I did hear about that, and I had also heard about one of the police lieutenants in the town of East Fishkill who is no longer there. He was indicted. He apparently had a drug problem, took some drug evidence out of the police officer's lockers, smoke the crack cocaine, what have you, and go around. And what happened was he was robbing like hair salons and banks with a wig on. That was also in the newspaper and everything. And I believe he did like 7 years in state prison. But that was prior to me getting hired.
Right, but you were certainly aware that there had been some issues within the department in the past.
Yes, yeah.
you go in the year 2000. I assume that for some amount of time, things would have gone fairly smoothly for you.
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, I was ecstatic because when I got the letter of acceptance that they were interested in hiring me, and I went to the physical agility, and there was a lot of police candidates there, and there was quite a few females there as well, and I was the only female that passed the physical agility, so I was like so excited. Wow, I finally got hired full time. I'm a real cop now, so to speak. I'm not like a part timer or whatever. Everything went well for, I would say, about a month and a half to 2 months, and then after 2 months of my employment, the chief of police began making comments to me as he would pass me in the hallway, ask me what type of underwear I was wearing, if I wore G-strings, just very lewd, inappropriate comments. And I was the only woman police officer on a all-white male force consisting of 27 men, and this was the chief saying this to me. I kept my mouth shut. I just didn't know who to turn to. Plus, like I said, I was just so grateful for becoming a full-time police officer. I just didn't want to make any waves. And
that was your lifelong dream, right? That you finally got what you'd been working towards all this time. And obviously, no one is going to be very quick to throw that all out the window just because some jerk makes a few inappropriate remarks.
Absolutely.
Had that been the case, I'm guessing that we wouldn't be talking to you right now.
Right.
So this activity started within months of you being on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And did not de-escalate at that point.
No, it actually escalated. He became very, very brazen with me. Started becoming more cruder, more ruder, asking me. He would call me in his office, and I remember one time he had called me in his office, and this is about 4 months after being on the job, and he was at his desk, looking at his computer, and he had a big smile on his face, and he said, "Hey, come in here. I want to show you something." Now, this is my boss, so of course I go in his office, and so what's going on, Chief? He says, "Take a look at this." Now he's at work, at his work office, and he's viewing porn on his work computer. And what happened was, what he was looking at was a brunette. And he said, "This looks like you." He says, "Is this you?" Trying to be joking or whatever. I don't even know.
So, what was your reaction to that?
I was totally shocked. I said, "No." I said, "Of course not. That's not me." I was totally shocked. I was very embarrassed. I turned red, and I walked out of his. I walked out. I was appalled that this man, was using town property and misappropriating town property and viewing pornographic websites on the computer while on duty and while at work. I was simply, I was disgusted by it. I really was. But once again, who am I going to turn to? I didn't know who to turn to. Like I said, now this is escalating, and this is getting into like 4 months of my employment.
The chief is not single, is he?
He's married. He's been married twice. He's in his second marriage now. His first marriage, he cheated on his wife with his current wife, and they have a biological child in common. And that's how, I believe his wife found out he was cheating on her, and she divorced him. So, the man has a reputation. And
how about the other officers on the force? How were you treated by them?
It's pretty much, I was told, that the East Fishkill is basically a good old boys network. And they only, the ironic part is, they only employ one female at a time, which I did find odd. The other police officers, I never felt, as being the only woman there, being a minority, I never felt that I fit in with them. They would just say very crude remarks, refer to female complainants in derogatory manners. They would refer to women as the C word. You know, in my presence, they would have male, like nudie magazines in the department. And at one time, I remember I had asked a detective why they have male nudie magazines in the male's bathroom. And he said to me, he said, well, that's because every woman looks better with a dick in her mouth. That was his response to me. Once again, you know, this was a detective. This is a friend of the chief's, and that's how we got to be a detective.
Is this Detective Wood?
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, I just didn't know where to turn or, you know, what to do. You know, inside I did feel I was being treated very indifferent by the other officers. They would exclude me. For instance, simple little things, too. Like, at the end of, like, a 3 to 11 shift, our squad, you know, about 11:15 or so, we would go upstairs where the locker rooms are. And I had my own separate locker room, obviously. And then the males had theirs. They would get changed. You know, they would get changed. I would be in my locker room getting changed. And I would hear them laughing and wrestling and joking around, what have you. I was completely isolated from everything. And they would just leave, like the pack of them, you know, maybe four or five guys, you know, sergeant included, would just leave and not wait for me. Like, I wasn't part of their group. I was never accepted by them. But I want to tell you something, Ron. My stats and my awards, I constantly was in the top five as far as arrests go. It's documented. As far as giving out tickets, I was an active police officer. I'm an active person. I work out four or five times a week. It's not like I didn't deserve to be not accepted. You know what I'm saying? It really hurt me, and it was very painful that I was being treated just so hostily by my male coworkers.
But you understand, right, that's not because of anything to do with your job performance. It's rather obvious that it's not. What you're describing to me here is a culture of misogyny that's been allowed to not only continue but more or less flourish within the police department completely unchecked.
Right.
That doesn't say anything about you.
Mm-hmm.
That says a lot about the leadership in this department.
Right, yeah.
I mean, considering that, you haven't told us about everything that the chief's done to you. We're still, I think, about 4 months into it or however many months, and you're experiencing some sexual harassment from the chief, and you're having some problems with some of the other cops, and they're clearly all related to their misogynist attitudes.
Right.
Now, we should point out that in addition to being the only woman on the police force, you were also the only non-white member of the police.
Right.
And you, at some point, were telling me that you had to endure attacks based on your race.
Right. Yeah, they would call me, I remember one officer calling me, instead of Spanish, he would refer to me as Spinach, Officer Spinach. one guy had a, he went to the military for Iraq, and they put a flag up on the window, and one of the guys, I remember it was a 7-to-3 shift, and we were in the squad room, and he came downstairs and he said, did Perillo put up a Puerto Rican flag up? You know, he didn't know what kind of flag it was, you know, and I heard that. I was maybe 3 feet away from that remark, you know, and it was a derogatory remark. And then just from there, I would have to say maybe 5 months after my employment, after I got hired by them, the chief started to send me emails from, once again, his work computer while on town time during work, started to send me emails to my computer at home. and I saved about 23 of them. He probably sent me a total of, I would have to say, maybe 40 or so.
Over what kind of time period?
Oh, gosh, over starting 3 to 4 months into my employment until, I would say, it lasted maybe 5 months or 6 months.
And you saved these, right?
I did save some, yeah.
Do you have maybe a couple that you wouldn't mind sharing?
I do have one here, and it's dated 7/25 of 2001, 7:32 a.m. in the morning. It's from the chief. It's to my personal email address. And he starts off, and he says, "Hey, B.I.B." Now, his nickname for me was Bitch in Blue. You know, I mean, imagine going to work and your boss is calling you a bitch. I mean, whatever. He says, "Hey, B.I.B., if you get thrown in a lake, I would save you. Even give you mouth-to-mouth if needed." He puts, "You better show for the whole day or I will hurt you bad," threatening me. Mm-hmm. Goes on to say, "Where can you find a cooler or hotter chief anyway?" He says, I'm going to have to closely monitor the situation. I'm very jealous. I believe he was referring to a new boyfriend that I had. And he says, I wouldn't want you giving me ass just because of a trip. I would want you to give it to me because you wanted to give it."
Oh, jeez.
And then he makes a reference to, "I had bought a new car," and he puts in here, when he looked at my car and he had opened the door, and he says, "Is that how your car always smells? I guess with a great smell comes a great taste, too." And then he writes at the end here, "Okay, bad girl, I'm trying to corrupt you, but you're a hard one, hard body, too." And then he writes, "He, well, write me back soon. I won't hold my breath," because he knew I wouldn't, you know.
Yeah, I'm guessing you didn't respond to any of these emails.
If I responded to some of his emails, it was to get him off my back, kind of to throw him a bone, and it would just be like, "Oh, hi, how was your day?" And in other emails, which I don't have in front of me, he makes reference to how lame my emails are, how boring they are. He also writes in one of them, "Send me something juicy, your emails are boring." You know, because like I said, I mean, if I sent him a reply, it would simply just be like, you know, "Oh, you know, I went to the bank today, it was my day off, I slept in late." You know, just to get him off my back, so to speak.
Right.
I mean, like I said, I was just confused, I had nowhere to turn. This is a very unfortunate situation, but, I mean, this is coming straight down from my chief, calling me a bitch in blue, threatening to hurt me bad. There he's complimenting himself, telling, you know, "Where can you find a cooler or a hotter chief?"
And I'm guessing that there were other emails, well, you told me as much, that were even more sexually explicit than that.
Yes.
You mentioned that the emails did eventually stop. Did they stop as a result of your complaining to somebody, or
I don't know why they stopped. I think they stopped because he was just realizing his tactics, his motivation, whatever, it wasn't getting him anywhere. It certainly wasn't getting him with me, and they did just cease. I think even in his emails, he'd make reference on how I'm avoiding him. He would call me snooty because I wouldn't write him back or socialize with him. I just had no interest in doing so. I just wanted to be a cop, go in, do my job, and leave, just like any other person. But so the emails did stop, I would say, approximately about a year or so later, when he knew that, you know, I wasn't reacting to them in the way that he wanted me to react to them. Two of my breaking points was after this event happened. One of the lieutenants there was cheating on his wife with a young girl,
Is this Lieutenant Alberti?
Yes.
Okay.
With this young girl whose family owned a restaurant in the town of East Fishkill. Now, I'd have to say, I think he's maybe 39 years old or so. She was a 23-year-old girl. He's married, once again married, you know, with children. Started to cheat on his wife with this young girl. Apparently, this young girl was I don't know if she was bisexual or bicurious or something, but Mark Alberti would ask me on a constant basis. He would say, you know, my girlfriend thinks you're pretty. Would you fool around with her? She, you know, finds you attractive. Would you fool around with her? You know, and I was just like, Mark, no. You know, I mean, I was just disgusted that he was serious about this and he was propositioning me, you know, basically for a threesome or for him to watch me being engaged with this person. You know, and I just found that to be quite odd and just really inappropriate and out of place.
In the context with the rest of what you were going through, it couldn't have been terribly surprising to you.
No, it really, you know, that's the thing, Ron. I think I had built up a tolerance almost where I became, at a lack of a better word, I believe I just became very thick-skinned to the abuse and the emotional, I'll just say, wreckage that I was exposed to in that police department. And as I said before, I'm not the only female that had a problem with the town of East Fishkill. I mean, there was two others that sued. One woman ended up dropping her lawsuit for a low amount of money, I believe, and continued working there. And then she went out on a back injury. And the other one, she ended up leaving and then attempting to file a sexual harassment lawsuit, but I believe her statute of limitations were up, so she couldn't go through with that.
So but, these people, these women, the other former women police officers from East Fishkill are named Christine Fazio and Luis Palumbo, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, there comes a point where you get a visit at home.
Yes.
From the chief.
I was getting ready, actually, to work a 3 to 11 shift. I hear a knock on my door, on my apartment door. I open my door, and my boss, and I live outside of the town of East Fishkill. I live in the adjoining town. He was standing outside my door. And, you know, I just looked at him, you know, and he asked if he could come in, and I was just shocked, you know. I didn't know what to do. I was like, all right. I let him in, and he just, like, was, like, looking around my apartment, you know. It was just no reason. I didn't call him. I didn't invite him over. It was an unwelcomed visit. It was an intrusion of my privacy. I felt very violated that this man was in my home without contacting me first, without being invited.
And also without having any justifiable reason to be
no
there in the first place.
No reason at all. And let me mind you once again, on town time, in a town of East Fishkill police car, in his own personal police car, they give him to take home and back.
And outside of the department's jurisdiction.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had told him to leave. I need to finish getting ready to go to work.
And he just left?
Yeah.
Without saying a thing?
Without saying why he was there or anything. Now, you know, and going through my mind, I'm thinking the first reaction I have as a police officer, did I do something wrong? You know, like, what? Why would he be here? You know what I mean?
Right. Are you under investigation for something? Or yeah.
I mean, he's very intimidating. It was very intimidating for me. I think if there was more female police officers, if I wasn't the only female police officer, I could confer and confide in them and, you know, see what to do or whatever. But this is a typical boys' club, and, you know, I didn't know where to turn.
When did this visit to your home happen?
Jeez, I'd have to say...
After the emails.
Oh, yeah, it was after the emails, and then I did get a couple emails after he visited my home, and where he did comment about my apartment in the emails, saying that why don't you have any plants in there? It's kind of dark. I live in a basement apartment. He writes it's kind of dark in there, you know, things like that. So it was around the time, it was during the emails where he was mm-hmm. Most persistent, and then you know, like I said, once I wasn't engaging in his propositions, he died down a little bit.
But still, through all of this, you haven't taken it above his head or made any formal complaint or taken any job action at all, right?
Well, no, I wasn't. Like I said, he was the big cheese, so I wasn't sure where I could who I could report him to. You know, I wasn't sure where I should go or what I should do. And the last straw, which after I endured all of this for 5 years, the last straw was at his wife's surprise birthday party.
And this is in 2004?
Yes. He threw her a surprise birthday party. I went into the ladies' restroom, and I had no idea he was watching me. Apparently he was. He followed me into the ladies' restroom, where he grabbed me from behind. He grabbed me by my breast, and then he turned me around, pulled me to him in an attempt for me to, you know, to kiss me. This guy's like 6'1", maybe, mm-hmm. I don't know, 180 pounds or so. And I had pushed him back. You know, I was just dumbfounded. I pushed him back, and I locked myself. I went into a stall, and I locked myself in the stall until he left. And on his way out, I heard him say, "You would be a slice of heaven," on the way out. And now, that was when I decided, this, my life, you know, what am I going to get raped? Am I going to go to work now and get raped? I mean, at this point, I was fearful. I was extremely frightened. It was affecting me emotionally, physically.
Well, what you're describing, I mean, in terms of the law, I mean, you're the police officer, so you can tell me if I'm right or not, but I think what you just described to me is a sexual assault.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It is a sexual assault.
So that's a pretty serious crime.
Yeah. And I notified the FBI of that. I notified my civil rights attorney of that. You know, and that's going to be in their hands at this point. Apparently, the town board in the town of East Fishkill has turned a deaf ear on taking any disciplinary action against Chief Brian Nichols and his designees for harassing me. And that's just a shame that this type of behavior is not only gotten away with, but almost they get patted on the back, it seems like.
I don't think that's very uncommon. I think that's fairly symptomatic of these kinds of problems, regardless of where they occur.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's obviously disturbing that these people are doing this at the same time that taxpayers are paying them to protect and serve
them.
It makes no sense.
It does make no sense.
At this point, you decide to sue the department. I'm wondering how that thought process worked for you. I understand you were frightened and you were concerned for your safety and that you'd been subjected to literally years of harassment
mm-hmm.
For both your race and your gender. And I gather from what you were saying before that this assault was the turning point.
Yeah, that was the turning point, and I had felt that I was, it was affecting me to the point where, as a woman, I didn't even want to go to work anymore. And here I was, you know, young female, I was excited, yay, you know, I got on the job full time. I mean, it was like my world, and it affected me so bad where I actually, like, fell into a depression and started to call in sick a lot. And I know other female police officers can probably relate, if they've been through the same situation as me, can relate to my feelings. But I actually started to become very depressed, where I had called into work. I'm sick a lot because I didn't even want to go there. I didn't want to be exposed to what I was being exposed to. And at that point, they had started to write me up for every little thing, you know, some sick usage time. They wrote me up one time because I didn't handcuff a female that I arrested. She was like 90 pounds, and the reason why I didn't, it's very interesting, I'm also a DARE instructor. However, I did not arrest her because, excuse me, I didn't put her in handcuffs because her 7-year-old son was in the back seat of the car, and he was crying. And I felt, being a human being and being a woman, mm-hmm. being a person, doesn't matter man or woman, being a person of compassion, I had felt, now if I handcuff this girl, who imposed no threat to me, I patted her down, searched her pocketbook, her car, whatever, she imposed no threat to me, her son was visibly upset, crying hysterically, I didn't want to place handcuffs on her because I didn't want this boy to grow up and have an image in his mind that his mom, that the police are bad, or his mom was bad.
Right.
So as I'm driving her back to my police station, and she's in the back seat of my car, I allowed her to make a phone call and had her boyfriend pick up the car, you know, with her son, but I needed to process her. One of my lieutenants noticed that she got out of the back seat of my car without handcuffs on. He questioned me about it later in the afternoon, and I had told him that, you know, what I just said, a 7-year-old was visibly upset. He was crying. I used officer discretion. She imposed no threat. I mean, the girl weighed maybe 89 pounds, like 4'11". He actually wrote me up for that. And I just couldn't believe that. I mean, that, you know, when you're a police officer, in my opinion, you're supposed to have and show compassion to the public. Like you said, they pay our salary, pretty much. And I used my judgment. I used compassion. I used, you know, my discretion. As a police officer, I used my rights. And I got written up for that.
Is there actually a rule that says you have to have handcuffed everybody you bring in to be processed?
No, okay. It's at the officer's discretion.
Right.
And I used my discretion. However, I still got written up for that. And at that point, I felt they were threatening not only my emotional state, my well-being, my career. I just felt that they were just threatening me all around, and I became very concerned for myself and for the safety of myself. And at that point, I did retain counsel, and I did file a civil rights lawsuit for sexual harassment in November of 2004. At this time, it is still pending. It has not been settled. No papers have been signed at this time. We're at this point, we're throwing around some numbers.
But you've been offered a reasonably, I mean, to me, it sounds like certainly in Canadian money, mm-hmm. it's a really big settlement.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, here's the thing. They've wrecked my career. So what they want me to do is resign from the town of East Fishkill. So if they want my resignation, absolutely. I've worked so hard to become a police officer, and I take pride in it. And I still would want to pursue this path of being in law enforcement, hopefully in a different department that's more accepting of women mm-hmm. police officers.
That shouldn't be hard.
Yeah. That's a shame. It really is. I understand, you know, just from seeing things on the Internet and reading books and everything about women in law enforcement, I'm not the first woman that's been through this, and I certainly won't be the last. And this is why I wanted to do this interview, because I think we should shed light on the inhumane treatment of women cops who are just trying to do their job. I didn't ask to be harassed. I just wanted to go to work like everybody else.
We contacted the East Fishkill Police Department and Chief Brian Nichols for this program, but they refused to speak to us on the record. That is all for Bad Cop No Donut this week. Please feel free to send us your comments and story ideas. The email address for this program is ron@ckln.fm. Thanks to Dina Perillo and everyone who sent in articles for this week's program. Bad Cop No Donut is produced in the studios of CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto and can be heard in Olympia, Washington on Free Radio Olympia 98.5 FM. I'm Ron Anisich. Thank you for listening.